Hello, everyone, and welcome. My name is Toni Rialli, and I'm the Southeast Coastal Organizer for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. I'd like to thank you all for joining us today, and a special thanks to George Kavros, who is our featured speaker. One of my main responsibilities for Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, or SACE, is to manage the Southeast Coastal Climate Network. And for those of you who are not familiar with this group, the network is made up of about 120 individuals representing about 53 organizations from Maryland to Louisiana. And those numbers include the Florida Climate Alliance, which many of you that are on this call are part of the Florida Climate Alliance. And our groups are dedicated to fostering regional leadership and mitigating adapting to the challenges of global warming. And we work together to create action opportunities for members. Also, you may have seen a lot of my emails that go out. So I provide the networks, the Southeast Coastal Climate Alliance, with information and ways to engage. If any of you would like to become members of the Southeast Coastal Climate Network or the Florida Climate Alliance, you can email me directly at Toni, T-O-N-I, at cleanenergy.org. And the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy is the host organization for the Southeast Coastal Climate Network. And this webinar is just one of many that we provide to our members service. So back to why we're here today. Again, I've heard a few beeps. And so we're here to talk today about Florida's renewable energy future, and our guest speaker is George Kavros. He is an energy law attorney in private practice in Fort Lauderdale, and he works with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy as a clean energy policy consultant. He has testified and provided written comment to the Governor's Climate Action Team, the Department of Environmental Protection, the Florida Public Service Commission, and the Florida Energy Commission on issues ranging from everything from energy efficiency to implementation on cap-and-trade policy design. And so today he'll discuss what the potential for renewable energy is in Florida, why it's important to Florida's economy and the environment, specifically how the Renewable Portfolio Standard, or RPS, will work. Additionally, we will talk a little bit about how the nuclear industry is trying to undermine the goals of this RPS, and lastly, how you can help get a clean and strong Florida RPS passed this session. And so at this time, I'd like to hand it over to George. And just a reminder for those of you who joined, if you wouldn't mind putting yourselves on mute until we get to the question-answer session. If your phone does not have a mute button, you may hit *6 to mute and unmute yourself. So without any delay, George, would you like to take over?
Sure. Thanks, Toni. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. As Toni mentioned, I work as a consultant with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy in Florida. And what I hope to accomplish today is to provide a broad overview of the importance of integrating more renewable energy into our statewide energy mix, the potential for renewable energy in Florida, and a description of the Renewable Portfolio Standard, or the RPS, proposal that's before the Florida legislature. And I hope the discussion will be informative. Again, it's going to be a broad overview of why it's important that we adopt an ambitious RPS now in Florida. And I'll speak for about 20 minutes, and then we'll open it up to questions. And I want to thank Toni for helping me out and moving the slides along. You know, I thought it'd be kind of important to sort of give a brief history of how we got here. I know maybe some of you on this call were involved in the coal plant challenges of 2005 to 2007. In the environmental community at that time, there were a lot of coal plants slated for construction. The environmental community fought those plants, and the last one to be defeated was the plant proposed by Florida Power and Light in the Everglades. As you may know, coal is the most carbon-intensive kind of fuel that you can use to produce electricity and along with the public distaste that was expressed by Governor Crist, all those plans were taken off the table. So the question then was, you know, what do we do now? And I specifically work on energy efficiency issues, greenhouse gas reduction plans, and also renewable energy. And what I want to cover today is why renewable energy certainly is important. And maybe we could go to the next slide. Great. And, you know, again, I just kind of want to step back and give a really broad overview, and I apologize to anyone if this is, a bit simplistic, but it really goes to the core of why we need to focus on renewable energy now. The first one is energy security. Currently, over 60% of our oil is imported into the United States. Now, while we don't use a lot of oil in the production of electricity in Florida, it's just a couple percentage points, we do use a lot of natural gas, and natural gas is primarily imported into Florida. And, granted, it is a sort of a cleaner burning fossil fuel than coal. It still emits CO2. It has sort of a very high price volatility, and it's certainly subject to disruptions. And Florida will be reliant on natural gas to the tune of about 45% of its energy mix by the year 2016. And also, since Florida does not have oil rigs, or since we don't mine coal, 85 cents out of every dollar that we spend on energy now leaves the state. So we need to keep that money in the state. And one of the benefits of renewable energy is that it creates jobs and keeps money in the state. If you've been reading the headlines recently, you know that President Obama hopes to make the foundation of our economic recovery on green jobs. And hope that will be the basis of our recovery. And, you know, the jobless rate in Florida right now hit a 16-year high as of December. It's at 8.1%, and there's about 800,000 Floridians out of work right now. So certainly job creation is a very important reason to go forward with, to move forward and to incentivize renewable energy. And you can see this is, a small mention there of how renewable energy is superior to traditional sources in creating jobs per megawatt of capacity. You can see that solar energy creates 15 to 30 jobs per megawatt. We had actually in the process of putting this together and doing some legislative outreach in the Florida legislature, I looked at a bunch of studies, compiled some studies and did some analysis and found that for each megawatt of capacity, solar energy creates about 15 to 30 jobs, and the biomass industry creates about 9 jobs, and as you can see, the nuclear industry creates less than half a job per megawatt of capacity. And also, ratepayer protection is another reason to move to renewables. You hear a lot about the high cost of renewables, but the truth is that renewables actually help ratepayers. Statewide, 2006 average residential rates were 41% higher than they were in 2000, and that's without any significant investment in clean energy. Those price spikes were created by traditional generation, primarily high fuel costs. Additionally, early cost recovery starting this year for proposed nuclear plants is slated to drive up Progress Energy's ratepayer bills by up to 25%, and actually construction cost estimates for nuclear units have tripled in the last several years and are expected to increase, and that places enormous risk on the back of ratepayers, because in 2006, the Florida legislature passed a law that allowed early cost recovery for nuclear plants, which means that customers get billed for them as they're being built. They don't have way to charge customers on the back end, and that's actually getting a lot of pushback right now from in the Florida legislature. There's really sort of a ratepayer revolt and starting in Progress Energy's territory. And just so energy bills this year are slated to go up 25% in Progress's territory, 16% in FPL's territory, and 12% in Tampa Electric territory. So there are already huge rate increases on the horizon for ratepayers. But, you know, when you compare that to renewable energy, a lot of renewable energy sources have stable or no fuel cost at all. In the case of solar energy, there is no fuel cost. In the case of biomass energy, it's a very stable fuel supply and fuel cost. And when you integrate those sources into your energy mix, it lowers the risk volatility of these of your energy sources overall, and it actually insulates ratepayers from the kind of price shocks that they're seeing now. And the last one, of course, is environment. If we could go to the next slide.
Yeah, I apologize. There's a little computer delay.
Okay, no worries. You can see that electricity consumption. This is a graph from the Florida Climate Action Team report, and you can see that electricity consumption accounts for 42% of greenhouse gas emissions. And, you know, basically every time we turn on a computer or recharge our cell phones, you know, our local power plants are running harder and emitting carbon unless they're using emission-free resources like solar and wind. So it's important that we try to get at that 42% and try to reduce that through renewable energy resources. And you all know that that Florida is on the front lines of global warming impacts. So it's incumbent that we do all that we can. Okay, so why don't we go to the next slide? So what is clean energy? And where's Florida today? I listed some of the we have available here and what we have in terms of megawatt capacity today. We've got solar PV that converts the sun's energy directly into electricity. We have solar thermal. The Public Service Commission did a study on solar resources as part of their process in coming up with an RPS rule, and I'll describe that later, but they didn't consider anything less than 2 megawatts of solar thermal. So right now it's classified as 0 megawatts. Solar thermal, you know, basically just harnesses solar energy for heat. It typically heats a liquid directly for, you know, usually heats water directly for hot water or to create steam to drive a turbine. We also have a solid biomass in the state, and it's actually quite substantial. You know, it includes a whole bunch of things. It includes agricultural waste. It can include energy crops. And it can include municipal solid waste. Florida Crystals actually has the largest biomass plant in the country at 140 megawatts, and that's driven just by sugarcane waste. You can see that we don't have any wind in Florida at the moment. You know, there's a lot of potential for offshore wind in Florida, but the potential for onshore is small because you need a steady 13 mile per hour wind, and we just don't have those resources onshore in Florida. But you do see a lot more wind potential as you move up the Atlantic coast of Florida towards Georgia. And lastly, you know, we don't have any ocean energy now, but there are some promising projects taking place at Florida Atlantic University trying to tap the energy from the Gulf Stream. And I think we can go to the next slide. Yeah. And I also wanted to mention, actually, on the prior slide, no need to go back to it, though, that we're about at 3.6% renewable energy right now in Florida, according to the Public Service Commission. The Navigant report, which I alluded earlier, the consultant report actually had us a little higher at about 5%. Now, the Public Service Commission hired Navigant Consulting to do a study to determine exactly what is our renewable potential here in Florida, and they modeled it on three different investment scenarios, a 1% cost cap, a 2% cost cap, and a 5% cost cap. And that cost cap is the amount that your electricity bill would go up because of the use of renewable energy in the energy mix. And, you know, a whole bunch of different factors went into arriving at these numbers. You know, they looked at incentives from government programs, the price of carbon emissions, the availability of capital, and came up with this, you know, that we could reach 24% renewable energy with a 5% cost cap. So we can, you know, definitely reach 20% with a very moderate investment. And again, you hear a lot about the opponents of renewable energy will cite its high cost. But if you look at the rate impacts below, but Progress, FPNO, and TECO from traditional energy, you can see that the you know, the rate impacts from renewables are really a bargain. The question is, you know, we all pay for new energy, and do you want to be on the trajectory that we're on now, where we are wedded to high fuel costs and soaring capital construction costs for nuclear units, or do you want to get on sort of the downward trend of renewable energy, where you have, for, you know, very little in the way of fuel costs and capital costs that are dropping? And I think most people would opt for the downward trend if, you know, someone could explain it to them in a way that they would understand it. Okay, I think we can go to the next slide. Great. And I just threw this in here because sometimes folks get RPSs mixed up and cap and trade greenhouse gas reduction programs, sometimes confused. An RPS drives renewable energy by mandating a certain percentage by a certain time. We hope to have a 20% by 2020 RPS in Florida. Right now there's 28 state RPSs. And California has the most aggressive at 20% by 2010. There's also a federal RPS that may be on the horizon in early spring. Representative Markey has put forth a bill that would call for 25% renewable energy by 2025. So this drives renewable energy by a mandate and greenhouse gas reduction plans, whether it's cap and trade or carbon tax, put a tax on carbon, which in place drives investment in renewable energy to seek new energy sources that don't emit as much carbon. There's usually renewable resources. Okay, we can move to the next slide. Okay, so how do we get here? Governor Crist issued an executive order in July 2007 that called for an RPS, renewable portfolio standard, of 20%. Now, he didn't actually give a date in the executive order, but his public statement has been clear that he hopes to see that by 2020. He also wanted an emphasis on solar and wind in the RPS. So the Public Service Commission began one or two workshops after the governor's executive order, but it was unclear whether the Public Service Commission actually had the legislative authority to carry out the governor's executive order. So the following year, in House Bill 7135, the Florida legislature passed the bill that gave the PSC, Public Service Commission, authority to go ahead and do an RPS, but it had the caveat that it had to come back to the legislature for ratification. So that's a little unusual. That usually doesn't happen. Usually you just task an agency to come up with a rule, and they go through the rulemaking process, and then they issue the rule. But in this case, the legislature wanted wanted the last word on renewable energy. So the Public Service Commission rulemaking process consisted of about a year and a half of rulemaking. A variety of different things were discussed, like targets and timelines. At first, the staff at the Public Service Commission had proposed a target of 2050 to reach 20%, which we thought was ludicrous, and the clean energy community, you know, publicly criticized them for that. They came back with a revised rule that, put it at 2041. Again, you know, they're publicly criticized for that. It would have been the weakest RPS in the nation at that point. Eventually, they did come to a 20%. They offered the commission a 20% by 2020 option, and the commission took it. Also, some of the things that were negotiated was a carve-out. Do you set aside a certain percentage of the RPS for emission-free technologies like solar and wind? And the issue with that and why you would do it is because at the outset, solar tends to be a little more expensive than does, say, existing quote-unquote renewable resources, like, for instance, municipal solid waste. We've got about 500 megawatts of that in Florida, and it would be very inexpensive to expand that. And if there was no set-aside for emission-free resources, then everyone would rush to build municipal solid waste plants instead of investing in emission-free renewables. So it was decided that a 25% carve-out would be set aside for solar and wind. Also, the big discussion centered on the cost cap. How much investment do you want to allow in renewable energy? The PSC staff had recommended a 1% cost cap. Again, we thought that was a little low. At 1%, you're at $185 million. And we thought that was simply too low to incent any kind of real investment in renewable energy. Eventually, the cost cap went up to 2%, about $370 million. And that's the level at which they sent the proposal to the legislature. And lastly, there was a question of how do you provide an incentive for folks to go out and invest in renewable energy? And typically in the RPSs throughout the United States, they use a renewable energy credit. And the renewable energy credit is actually it's a premium, and it represents the renewable attribute of the energy that you're producing. And it's traded on the market. It's got a market value, and it's set by the market. There are others that have preferred, instead of going through this renewable energy credit market, they had preferred getting long-term contracts directly with the utilities, what they call standard offer contracts. And that's certainly one way to provide financial certainty for renewable energy investors, because they actually have to go out and borrow the money oftentimes to invest in renewable energy, and having a contract of that sort is certainly very helpful. And you may have also heard about feed-in tariffs. They're similarly, they are a long-term type of contract that provides financial certainty and allows certain operators, especially small operators, to go out and borrow money to invest in renewable energy. And now we are at the legislature, and they are looking at the rule. The rule was submitted January of this year, and it is at the legislature now. And we can go to the next slide. And you might be wondering, you know, why is he talking so much about economics and the economy? And that's because this was the intent language in House Bill 7135, and you can see that it is really driven by economics. You know, they want to promote the development of renewable energy. They want to encourage investment within the state. And you can see that environment is just one bullet point of the many bullet points that are there. And it seems that this is what the legislature really responds to, is economics more than environment, especially in the Florida legislature. Next slide. This is the language that's in the bill regarding renewable energy, defining renewable energy. As you can see, there is nothing there on nuclear energy. But there was a proposal advanced by Florida Power and Light during the workshops that that would have allowed renewable energy, nuclear energy, to be considered a resource eligible to be included in the 20% goal. They would actually reframe the RPS as a clean energy portfolio, or SEPs. And that proposal did not make it into the actual rule, but it was offered as a recommendation to the legislature. So in essence, the public staff, or the staff at the Public Service Commission, has laid the groundwork for this nuclear provision to be adopted by the legislature if they so choose. And we can go to the next slide. You know, nuclear energy is, you know, whether the legislature decides to support it or not, you know, they have taken different stands on it. As you may know, that Governor Chris is a supporter of nuclear energy, as are many of the leaders in the legislature, but if you were to include it in a renewable portfolio standard, it would just undermine the goals of the RPS. You can see right here that if Progress Energy would be allowed to include their two nuclear plants, they would be at 20% by 2020. It would simply maintain the status quo. They have about 10,000 megawatts of capacity now, and they are, you know, in the process, or if they did build the 211 nuclear units at about 2,200 megawatts, they'd be at 20% already. And likewise, SNL would already be at 10%. So it totally undermines the whole idea of going out and procuring renewables to drive this new economic engine here in Florida. Also, we can go to the next slide, too. I'll show you another reason why it's a bad idea. Look at the rate impacts. We were talking with renewables about a rate impact of about 1% or 2%. 2% equals about $2.50 on an average Florida bill. Look at these rate impacts that in Progress Energy's territory alone. And I don't know how they could possibly include nuclear in the cost cap or under the cost cap. If they did, it would eat up the whole cost cap that is devoted to nuclear energy. You know, it would simply bust the cap, and it simply has no place in a mechanism that's intended to promote renewable energy. But you can see, you know, why some of the utilities, especially Progress Energy and Florida Light, would be promoting it. Of course, they have two nuclear proposals on the table and would like to have those included in a quote-unquote clean energy portfolio standard to make their job a little easier. And lastly, I'll just go to the last slide at the end, which simply, I believe, has some links to a couple of the reports that I referred to, the Navigant Consulting Report and also the PSC draft rule, is actually the rule that went over to the legislature if you want to take a closer look at it. And, you know, we've got some upcoming events, and I will, let Tony talk about that a little bit more. But we do have an energy roundtable on the evening of March 16th, where we're going to have folks from a cross-section of a good mix of stakeholders in this process. We're going to have folks from the solar, the biomass, the utility industry, and academic there, discussing the Florida's potential and the renewable portfolio standard. That's on the evening of March 16th, and we're following that up with a citizens lobby day on March 17th, where we're asking folks to come up. We will provide training in the morning, and then we'll hit the Capitol to lobby on behalf of an ambitious RPS. One that certainly should not include traditional type of resources. So we're hoping that you can join us at both those events. And thanks so much.